Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone's Luke Jensen, Bounty Hunter. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Bradley Smith, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Graybill, Ren Casey, James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Danny Gavigan, Mort Shelby, Michael John Casey, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Drew Kopus, Jeff Allen, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, and Colleen Delaney. Luke Jensen, Bounty Hunter, Episode 1. A rifle bullet smacked off the top of the log and sprayed splinters toward Luke Smith's face. One of the splinters stung his cheek, close to his neatly trimmed black mustache. Luke looked into the sightless, staring eyes of the dead man who sat next to him. There was a bullet hole from one of Luke's Remingtons in the middle of his forehead, surrounded by powder burns.
Those amigos of yours are getting closer with their shots, Jose. Too bad for you that you're not alive to watch them kill me. Reckon you probably would have enjoyed that.
After another short barrage, Luke looked at the cabin 100 yards away, next to a little creek at the bottom of the slope. The sturdy log structure had been built for defense, with thick walls and numerous loopholes where rifle barrels could be stuck out and fired. Luke had no idea who had built the cabin, probably some old fur trapper or prospector. But currently, it was being used as a hideout for the Solomon Burke gang. Luke had been on the trail of Burke and his bunch for several weeks. There was a $1,500 bounty on Burke's head and lesser amounts posted on the half-dozen owl hoots who rode with him. If Luke was able to bring in all of them, it would be a mighty nice payoff for him. Unfortunately, his plan hadn't worked out. Jose Cardona saw him crouched in the timber up on the hill overlooking the creek. Somehow Jose had snuck up behind him and tackled him down the hill. The ruckus had alerted the others, and now he found himself in this dust-up. Luckily, before Cardona could do any more, Luke had palmed out one of his Remingtons and shot him in the head. Now he found himself stuck behind a log with nowhere else to go. Luke's craggy face was grim in spite of the ghost of a smile lurking around his mouth. In the years he'd spent as a bounty hunter, he'd been in plenty of tight spots and had always pulled through somehow. After all, he had already cheated certain death once. A man didn't get too many breaks like that. But he knew his luck was bound to run out someday. From time to time, he rose up long enough to throw a couple of shots at the cabin, but not really expecting to do any damage. Too long range for a handgun. He could put up a better fight if his Winchester wasn't still in the saddle boot strapped to his horse, a good 100 feet upslope. Might as well have been 100 miles. Suddenly, one of the bullets tore all the way through the log and struck a rock lying on the slope. Luke realized the log had been lying there long enough to be half-rotten in places. He holstered the Remington he was still holding and drew a heavy-bladed knife from its sheath on his left hip. Attacking the log with the blade, he hacked and dug at the soft wood. It didn't take him long to break through and see what he'd been hoping to see. The log was partially hollow. Luke began enlarging the opening he had made and soon realized the hollow part ran all the way to one end of the log. He could see sunlight shining through it. It took 15 minutes of hard work to carve out a big enough hole for him to fit his head and shoulders through. By the time he was finished, sweat was dripping down his face. He sheathed his knife and looked over at Cardona.
Adios, Jose. If I see you again, I reckon it'll probably be in hell.
Down below, in the cabin, the outlaws hadn't been able to see what he was doing. He could only hope none of them had snuck around to where they could observe him. If they had, he was as good as dead. He began shifting his weight back and forth as much as he could in those close confines. He felt insects crawling on him. His nerves twanged, taut as bowstrings. The log began to rock back and forth slightly. Bunching his muscles, he threw himself hard against the wood surrounding him. Suddenly, it was rolling. With nothing between the log and the cabin to stop it, the crazy, spinning, dizzying ride lasted only a few seconds. The log crashed into the side of the cabin. Luke bulled his way out of the broken trunk, pulling both Remingtons from their cross-draw holsters as he did so. He was on his feet when one of the outlaws appeared in the doorway. Luke shot him in the chest with a left-hand Remington. As the dead man fell, another outlaw stepped out the doorway and started to bring around his pistol. Luke blasted that hombre with a right-hand gun, then pressed himself against the cabin wall and waited. The men inside couldn't bring their guns to bear on him from those loopholes, and the log walls were too thick to shoot through. If anybody tried to rush out through the door, he was in position to gun them down. And if the door was the only way out, he had them bottled up. Of course, he couldn't go anywhere either. But a stalemate was better than being stuck behind that log and his enemies having all the advantage. He had only a few tense minutes before the outlaws figured all that out, too.
Who are you, mister?
Name's Luke Smith.
I've heard of you. You're a bounty hunter.
Am I talking to Solomon Burke?
That's right.
Who are the two boys I killed in there?
How do you know they're dead?
Wasn't time for anything fancy. They're dead, all right.
Phil Gaylord and Oscar Montrose.
Jose Cardona's dead up on the hillside. I blew his brains out. That's nearly half your bunch gone over the divide, Burke. Why don't you throw your guns out and surrender before I have to kill the rest of you?
Mighty big talk, Smith. You step away from that wall and you'll be full of lead in a hurry. How in blazes are you gonna kill anybody else?
I've got my ways.
Luke looked along the wall next to him. One of the loopholes, empty now, was within reach.
We got food, water, and plenty of ammunition. What do you have?
Got a cigar.
Well, go ahead and smoke it then. It'll be the last one you ever do.
Luke kept his left-hand gun trained on the doorway. He pouched the right-hand iron and reached under his coat, bringing out a thin black cigar. He bit off the end, spit it out, and clamped the cylinder of tobacco between his teeth. Fishing a lucifer from his pocket, he snapped it to life with his thumbnail. He held the flame to the end of the cigar and puffed it until it was burning good.
Smell that?
Shoo! Smells like you set a wet dog on fire.
Tastes good, though. I've got something else.
What might that be?
Luke took another cylinder from under his coat. Longer and thicker than the cigar, it was wrapped tightly in dark red paper. A short length of fuse dangled from one end. Luke puffed on the cigar until the end was glowing bright red, then held the fuse to it.
This!
He leaned over and shoved the cylinder through the empty loophole.
Look out! That's dynamite!
Luke threw his second gun and swung away from the wall as he extended the revolvers and squared himself up. As the outlaws tumbled through the door, he started firing. They shot back, of course, even as Luke's lead tore through them and knocked Solomon Burke off his feet. He felt the impact as a bullet struck him, then another. But he stayed upright. Dour, sallow Lane Hutton stumbled and fell as blood from his bullet-torn throat cascaded down the front of his shirt. Young Billy Wells died with half his jaw shot away. Paco Hernandez stayed on his feet despite getting shot and got a final shot off even as he collapsed with blood welling from two holes in his chest. That last bullet rocked Luke. He swayed and spit out the cigar but didn't fall. His vision was foggy because he'd been shot three times or because clouds of powder smoke were swirling around him. He couldn't tell. The Remingtons seemed to weigh 1,000 pounds apiece, but he didn't let them droop until he was certain all the outlaws were dead. Then he couldn't hold the guns up anymore. He stumbled through the cabin door. The single room inside was dim and shadowy. The cylinder he had shoved through the loophole lay on the floor near a table. The fuse had burned out harmlessly. The blasting cap on the end was just clay, and the dynamite was nothing more than a piece of wood with red paper wrapped around it. Luke had used it a number of times before. Outlaws tended to panic when they thought they were about to be blown to kingdom come. Ignoring the fake dynamite, he stumbled across the room. Sitting on the table was the thing he had hoped to find inside. It took him a couple of tries before he was able to snag the neck of the whiskey bottle and lift it to his mouth. Some of the liquor spilled over his chin and throat, but he got enough of the fiery stuff down his throat to brace himself. He leaned on the rough-hewn table and tried to take stock of his injuries. He'd been hit low on his left side. There was a lot of blood. A bullet had torn a furrow along his left forearm, too, and blood ran down and dripped from his fingers. The bullet hole high in his chest was starting to make his right arm and shoulder go numb. He needed to stop the bleeding before he did anything else. With little time before his hands quit working, he pulled the bandana from around his neck and used his teeth to start a rip in it. He tore it in half and managed to pour some whiskey on the pieces. He pulled up his shirt, felt around until he found the hole in his side, and shoved one wadded-up piece of the whiskey-soaked bandana into the hole. But that was just where the bullet had gone in. He located the exit wound and pushed the other piece of bandana into it. That left the hole in his chest. He could tell that it had pierced his lung. The bullet hadn't come out, either. It was still in there somewhere. Not good, he thought. Fumbling, he pulled his knife from its sheath and used the blade to cut a piece from his shirt tail. Lucky he didn't slice off a finger or two in the process. He upended the bottle and poured whiskey right over the wound. He bit back a scream as he crammed the piece of cloth into the hole. That was all he could do. His muscles refused to work the way he wanted them to. He had to lie down. He took an unsteady step toward one of the bunks built against the side walls. The world suddenly spun crazily around him. He felt consciousness slipping away from him and knew if he passed out, he probably wouldn't wake up again. He tried to hold on, but a black tide swept over him. That black surge didn't just wash him away from his primitive surroundings. To his already fevered mind, it seemed to lift him and carry him back, back. A bit of human flotsam swept along by a raging torrent to an earlier time and a different place. For long days, that devil Ulysses S. Grant and his Yankee army had squatted outside Richmond, pounding away at the capital city of the Confederacy with their big guns. Half the buildings in town had been reduced to rubble, and untold numbers of Richmond citizens were dead, killed in the endless barrages. Rangy, raw-boned Luke Jensen felt the floor shake under his feet. The shells fell not far from the building where he stood. It had been one of Richmond's genteel mansions, not far from the capital itself, but recently it had been taken over by the government. One particular part of the government, in fact, the Confederate Treasury. Luke was one of eight men summoned tonight for reasons unknown. They were waiting in what had been the parlor before the comfortable, overstuffed furniture was shoved aside and replaced by desks and tables. In the light of a couple of smoky lamps, he glanced around at the other men. Some of them he knew, and some he didn't. The faces of all bore the same weary, haggard look, the expression of men who had been at war for too long and suffered too many defeats despite their best efforts. Luke knew that look all too well. He saw it in the mirror every time he got a chance to shave, which wasn't very often these days. For nearly four long years, he had worn Confederate gray. Ever since the day he had walked away from the hardscrabble farm tucked into the Ozark Mountains of southwestern Missouri and enlisted. Behind him, he'd left his father Emmett and his little brother Kirby, along with his mother and sister. It had been hard for Luke to leave his family, but he felt it was the right thing to do. Fighting for the Confederacy didn't mean a man held with slavery, although he figured that was what all those ignorant Yankees believed. Luke didn't believe at all in the notion of one man owning another. At the same time, he didn't think it was right for a bunch of northern politicians in by God Washington City to be telling southern folks what they could and couldn't do, especially when it came to secession. The states had joined together voluntarily back when they'd won their freedom from England. If some of them wanted to say thanks but so long and go on their way, it seemed to Luke they had every right to do so. Even so, if they just kept on wrangling about it in the halls of Congress, Luke, like a lot of other Southerners, would have pretty much ignored it and gone on about his business. But Abraham Lincoln had to go and send the army marching into Virginia, and the battle along the creek called Bull Run was the last straw as far as Luke was concerned. He'd been raised to avoid trouble if he could, but when a Jensen saw something wrong going on, he couldn't just sit back and do nothing. So he'd been a soldier for 4 years, fighting against the northern aggressors, slogging along as an infantryman for a while before his natural talents for tracking, shooting, and fighting got noticed, and he was made a scout and sharpshooter. He knew three of the men waiting in the parlor with him were of the same sort. Remy Duquesne, Dale Cardwell, and Edgar Milgard were good men, and if he was being sent on some sort of mission with them, Luke was fine with that. The other four had introduced themselves as Keith Stratton, Wiley Potter, Josh Richards, and Ted Casey. Luke hadn't formed an opinion about them based only on their names. He didn't blame them for being close-mouthed, though. He was the same way himself. Remy fired up a cigar.
Anybody got any idea why they brought us here tonight?
Not a clue.
Well, the Treasury Department has its office here now. Maybe they're finally going to pay us all those back wages we haven't seen in months.
Oh, I would not count on that, my friend.
Luke didn't think it was very likely either. The Confederacy was in bad shape. Financially, militarily, morale-wise. Everything was cratering, and there didn't seem to be anything anybody could do to stop it. They would fight to the end, of course. There was no question about that. But that end seemed to be getting more and more inevitable. The front door opened and several gray-clad troopers appeared in the arched entrance to the former parlor. They carried rifles with bayonets fixed to their barrels. A pair of officers followed the soldiers into the room. Luke and the other men snapped to attention. He recognized one of the officers as a high-ranking general. The other man was the colonel who commanded the regiment in which Luke, Remy, Dale, and Edgar served. The two men in civilian clothes who came into the room behind the general and the colonel were the real surprise. Luke recognized the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, and the secretary of the Treasury, George Trenholm.
At ease.
Luke and the others relaxed, but not much. It was hard to be at ease with the president in the room. Jefferson Davis gave them a sad, tired smile.
Thank you for coming here tonight, gentlemen. I know you'd probably rather be with your comrades in arms facing the enemy. I've summoned you because I have a special job for you. Secretary Trenholm will tell you about it.
As you know, Richmond is under siege by the Yankees. And although I hate to say it, it appears that our efforts to defend the city ultimately will prove to be unsuccessful.
Are you saying that Richmond's going to fall, sir?
I'm afraid so.
But that does not necessarily mean the Confederacy is about to fall as well. Our glorious nation will persevere. The Yankees may overrun Richmond, but we will establish a new capital elsewhere. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's quite all right, Mr. President. No one in this room has more right to speak than you. Of course, no government can continue to function without funds. So, to that end, acting on the orders of President Davis, I have assembled a shipment of gold bullion that is to be spirited out of the city and taken to Georgia to await the arrival of our government. Now, this is most of what we have left in our coffers, gentlemen. And I am not exaggerating when I say the very survival of the Confederacy itself depends on the secure transport of this gold.
The secretary nodded toward Luke's commanding officer.
Colonel Lancaster will be in charge of the gold safety.
You're taking the whole regiment to Georgia, sir?
The colonel shook his head.
Not at all, Corporal. That'd only draw the Yankees' attention to what we're doing. We're entrusting the safety of the bullion and the future of the Confederacy to a smaller detail. 8 men, to be exact. The 8 of you who are gathered here, and I'll be going along as well. I've been relieved of my command of the regiment and given this task.
I know. You'd rather be with the men you've led in such sterling fashion, Colonel. However, we must all make sacrifices for our noble cause.
Of course, Mr. President.
Davis turned back to Luke and the other scouts.
No one is going to order you enlisted men to accept this assignment. If there are any of you who don't want to go along, speak up now, and it won't be held against you. You'll be allowed to return to your units. All we ask is that you say nothing about this. Secrecy is a watchword until the bullion is safely on its way to Georgia.
Luke looked at his friends. Remy shrugged.
Mr. President, I don't think any of us are going to say no to this job.
That's right. If this is something that'll help the Confederacy, you can count on us, sir.
I knew that. I knew you valiant lads wouldn't let me down, but I felt it was only right to ask. Thank you for justifying my faith in you.
You can thank us when we get that gold where it's going, Mr. President.
When are we leaving?
Tonight.
That soon.
You have a problem with that, Sergeant? Something you need to do here in Richmond before you leave?
Potter shook his head.
Permission to speak freely, sir?
Go ahead.
Richmond's turned into a hellhole ever since the Yankee showed up on our doorstep. And as far as I'm concerned, the sooner we get out of here, the better.
You should get back to somewhere safer, sir. The Colonel and I can handle this.
Very well, General. Come on, George.
The troopers escorted the two politicians from the room. Once they were gone, Colonel Lancaster spoke.
Now, the gold's being stored in a warehouse not far from here. It's packed in crates and a couple of wagons and covered with canvas so they look like supplies.
No offense, Colonel, but are you sure that's a good idea? With the city cut off like it is, people are starting to get pretty hungry. They're liable to come after food quicker than they would gold.
How else would you suggest we transport it, Jensen?
I don't know, sir. As scarce as everything is these days, folks are going to be interested no matter what it looks like.
Well, that's why it's up to us to get the wagons out of the city quickly and with as little fuss as possible. We have civilian clothes at the warehouse for all of you as well. Hopefully that'll keep you from drawing too much attention.
Luke didn't know about that, but the idea of getting some fresh duds appealed to him. His only possessions still in good shape were his Fayetteville rifle and his Griswold and Gunnison revolver, both of which he kept in excellent condition. The general shook hands with all eight of the scouts.
Good luck, men.
Let's go. We'll dispense with the military formality since we're supposed to be civilians, but don't forget who's in charge here.
Well, I don't know about you boys, but I feel like a whole new man in this getup.
The civilian clothes they had donned when they reached the warehouse weren't new. Some of them even had patches here and there, but they were clean and in much better shape than the uniforms the eight men had been wearing. Colonel Lancaster, as befitted his rank, was dressed in the only real suit, including a flat-crowned planter's hat. Other than his ramrod-stiff backbone, in those clothes, and with his florid face and thick side whiskers, he might have been mistaken for a plantation owner. The other men were dressed more like overseers on that hypothetical plantation, in boots, whipcord trousers, linsey-woolsey shirts, and leather vests. They wore an assortment of headgear ranging from broad-brimmed hats to tweed caps. Luke had snagged one of the hats he thought made him look like a plainsman. Such men rode through the Ozarks from time to time on their way to or from the vast western frontier, and Luke had always admired them. His revolver was tucked in the waistband of the trousers. Most enlisted men didn't carry handguns, but since scouts often had to do some close-quarters fighting, they'd been issued revolvers along with their rifles. Luke considered himself pretty handy with either weapon, and with a knife, too, for that matter. Wiley Potter, Keith Stratton, Ted Casey, and Josh Richards clustered together near one of the wagons. Luke saw them casting furtive glances at the canvas-covered cargo in the back of the vehicle.
Like dogs licking their chops over a big soup bone, huh?
You can't blame them. I sent some mighty hard looks at those wagons myself. I've never been this close to so much gold. Hell, back home I might go as long as a year without seeing as much as a double eagle.
Well, I suppose I'm more accustomed to it, seeing as I spent a lot of time in the gambling halls in New Orleans. The money always flowed freely there.
Maybe so. Where I come from, money flows more like quicksand.
Are we gonna be riding on the wagons, Colonel?
We'll have a driver and a guard on each wagon. The other four of you, plus myself, will be on horseback and serve as outriders.
Horses sound good. I always hankered to ride something better than an old mule. They turned me down for the cavalry because that's all I had.
You take turns at the jobs, at least starting out. I don't care who does what, though. You can settle that amongst yourselves.
I wouldn't mind handling one of the teams. I used to drive a freight wagon before the war.
So did I. I reckon I'll take the other driver's job starting out.
None of the other men volunteered to ride on the wagons as guards. Luke and Remy looked at each other. Luke shrugged.
We take the wagons too, Colonel.
Fine.
Lancaster looked to Potter, Stratton, Casey, and Richards.
You men will find your horses in the alley behind the warehouse. Bring them around front and mount up. You fetch my mount as well.
He motioned to the uniformed soldiers who'd been waiting in the warehouse, guarding the gold shipment.
Open the doors.
The troopers swung the big double doors back while Luke and his friends climbed onto the wagons. Luke settled down on the seat of the first wagon beside Dale.
Sure you can handle this?
Oh, yeah. To tell you the truth, I've never been that comfortable in a saddle.
I was riding almost before I could walk, at least according to my pa.
When the wagons rolled out of the warehouse into the darkness, Colonel Lancaster and the other four outriders were waiting on horseback.
I'll lead the way. Now I want to ride on each side of the wagons. Keep an eye out behind you as well. I don't want anybody sneaking up on us.
Did the Colonel tell any of us exactly where we're going?
Not that I know of.
I might say something to him about that the first time we stop. He's bound to have a map or something. But if anything happened to him, we wouldn't know where we were supposed to take this cargo.
Yeah, that's true. All we know is we're headed for Georgia, but Georgia's a pretty big place.
The city was dark except for the few fires started by exploding artillery shells. The Yankee bombardment continued. It went on almost around the clock. Luke didn't see how the city could hold out much longer.
What do you think it'd be like if one of those things landed right on top of us?
We'll never know.
Because it won't happen?
Because if it does, we'll be blown to smithereens before we know what happened.
You really know how to make a fella feel encouraged, Luke. Whoa!
Dale stopped short and hauled back on the reins. Colonel Lancaster had come to an abrupt halt in front of the wagon team. Garish, flickering lights spilled over the cobblestones as a large number of men, many of them carrying torches, surged around a corner up ahead.
That looks like trouble.
Luke was thinking the same thing. He knew mobs made of desperate civilians and deserters had taken to roaming the streets of Richmond. The army was trying to keep things under control, but it was getting more difficult with every passing day as the Yankee siege continued. Already there had been several riots.
There are some wagons! There might be food in them! Get them!
Luke saw Colonel Lancaster look around as if searching for a way out. The street was too narrow to turn the wagons around, and there were no alleys nearby.
Get ready to fight if you have to, Dale.
Luke pulled the Griswold and Gunnison revolver from his waistband and stood.
Mr. Lancaster, get out of the way!
As Lancaster yanked his horse to the side out of the line of fire, Luke thumbed back the hammer and squeezed the trigger. He sent the pistol ball slamming into the cobblestones just a few feet in front of the mob's leaders. They stopped in a hurry. The other members of the escort lifted rifles or pulled out pistols. Luke knew hunger could make a man risk a great deal, up to and including his life. He cocked the revolver again and raised the barrel until he was aiming right between the eyes of the man who'd urged the mob into action.
You fellas stay right where you are. We'll shoot if we have to. Make no mistake about that.
You can't kill all of us.
No, but we can do for half of you. Maybe more than that. And you'll be the first one to die, mister. Is it worth dying for something you can't even eat?
What is it? What's in those wagons?
Manufacturing equipment. We're trying to get it out of town while we still can.
What sort of equipment?
Leather goods. Tool and die presses.
Luke wasn't sure that answer even made sense. He just recalled hearing that phrase once from a fellow who owned a saddle shop.
You don't have any food?
Just our own provisions for the trip. And we're going to be on mighty short rations just like everybody else.
Well, we might as well let them go. Can't eat a bunch of damn machinery.
They got horses.
I'll be damned if I'm far enough gone that I'll eat horse meat. Let them pass.
After that bit of discourse, the crowd seemed to be of two minds. Some agreed they ought to let the travelers go, while others were so angered by the fate that had befallen them that they just wanted to hurt somebody. He glanced at his companions. They looked tense and ready to fight, but were scared, too. Luke hoped none of them panicked and got trigger happy. All it would take was one shot to set off an orgy of killing. Finally, the man in the lead stepped aside and swung the blazing brand.
All right, go on and get out of here. Get out of the way. Let him pass.
The men crowded to the sides of the street. As the wagons and riders passed between them, it was uncomfortably like running a gauntlet.
You made a wise decision, friend. Good luck to you.
You're the lucky ones. You're getting out of Richmond. Maybe the Yankees will catch you and kill you quick. The ones left behind here will be a long time dying.
As he reloaded the expended chamber, Luke had a feeling the man's grim prediction was correct. The gold escorts didn't encounter any more trouble as they made their way to the city's edge, but Luke knew they were far from being out of danger yet. The Yankees patrolled heavily around Richmond to keep the city's inhabitants bottled up while the artillery bombardment continued.
I appreciate your help with the mob back there, Jensen. But don't forget that I'm in command here. The way you took charge bordered on insubordination.
That's not the way I meant it, Colonel. I was just trying anything to keep those fellas from swarming over us.
I understand. Just remember in the future that you look to me for your orders.
Yes, sir.
The Colonel rode ahead again.
If we waited for him to figure out what to do, we'd all be dead now.
More than likely. The Colonel's a good commander out in the field, but I'm not sure he's really cut out for a job like this.
That's why I'm glad you're with us, Luke. You can think on your feet about as well as anybody I ever saw.
Luke took that compliment in silence. He had never thought of himself as any sort of strategist or tactician. He was just a fellow who wanted to stay alive. Their route took them north out of the city, which was opposite from where they wanted to go. But Luke understood why. The heaviest concentration of Yankee forces was south of Richmond. The scouts had to take the wagons north, then circle far to the west, well behind Union lines, and make a fast dash southward. Lancaster gave the signal to halt.
I want to be out of the city by dawn. The further away we can get, the better.
How will we dodge those Yankee patrols?
Well, we have to do some good scouting. That's why I want one of you men to give Jensen a horseshoe ride. I want a mount for Duquesne, too.
We've done plenty of scouting, Colonel. You can send a couple of us.
Jensen and Duquesne have served under my command. I know what they can do. You other men were recommended to me, but I haven't seen you in action yet. Now dismount, a couple of you.
They didn't look happy about it, but Richards and Casey swung down from their saddles.
Keep your eyes open, Dale.
You bet I will.
Taking his rifle with him, Luke hopped down from the wagon seat. He took the reins from Richards and mounted up.
Follow this road we're on and see if the way is clear up ahead, to the bridge about a mile from here. If it is, one of you come back and tell us, and we'll come ahead.
What if the Yankees have blown up the bridge, Colonel?
Then we'll have to find another way.
Crossing the river was probably going to be the most difficult part of getting out of Richmond. If the Yankees really wanted to keep the citizens and the Confederate government trapped in the city, the first thing they should have done was destroy all the bridges. But that would make it more difficult for them to get in and out of the city from the north once Richmond had fallen. So maybe one or two bridges were still standing. In normal times, the small road the Confederates were on was little used and might be overlooked, along with its bridge spanning the river. Those were anything but normal times, however. Luke and Remy moved forward, leaving the buildings on the edge of town behind. Trees crowded in on the road from both sides as they rode northward. Although the sky behind them was bright with the orange glow of fires and the flashes of exploding shells from the Yankee barrage, the darkness grew thicker the farther they went. Luke eyed the trees warily. A Yankee cavalry patrol could be hidden in there, and he wouldn't see them until they opened fire. But he might be able to hear them. He kept his ears open, listening for hoofbeats, the jingle of bit chains, or coughs, and he watched his horse's ears. If the animal smelled other horses, it would prick its ears in the direction of the scent.
We fortunate. I don't think anybody out there right now.
Yeah, but I wouldn't count us lucky until we see whether the bridge is there.
The road was fairly straight, with only a few curves in it. They had just ridden around one when a large structure loomed in front of them about 200 yards away. Luke recognized it as the covered bridge that crossed the James River.
I see. It's still there.
Yeah.
His eyes searched the shadows around the bridge, looking for any sign of movement.
Seems to be deserted, too. We'd better take a closer look before one of us goes back and tells the Colonel the path is clear.
Yeah, you're right. Let's go.
Luke almost called out to his friend to tell him to slow down, but Remy was right. They didn't really have any time to waste. As Colonel Lancaster had said, the farther away from Richmond they were by morning, the better. Luke rode after Remy. When they were about 50 feet away from the bridge, he saw an orange muzzle flame split the night. Luke ducked in time. Suddenly, several men on horseback burst out of the trees just short of the bridge. Luke pulled the revolver from his waistband and cocked the gun as he brought it up. Even though he couldn't see their uniforms, he knew they had to be Yankee cavalrymen. Luke started to pull hard on the reins to whirl his horse around and flee, but saw something that made him stop short. A match had flared into life on the bridge. He could think of only one reason why somebody would be striking a lucifer out there: to light the fuse attached to a keg of blasting powder. The Yankees hadn't destroyed the bridge yet, but only because they were just getting around to it.
Cover me, Remy!
Luke did something the Yankees wouldn't have expected in a million years. He charged straight at them. Luke leaned over his horse's neck as he sent the animal lunging toward the cavalryman. He lifted his revolver again. He saw one of the troopers topple loosely from the saddle. A glance over his shoulder told Luke the trooper's friend had taken cover in the trees at the side of the road and opened up with his revolver. Remy was firing, too. The Yankees were confused. Instead of fleeing, as they had expected, the two Confederates were putting up a fight. The patrol's charge had broken up, and the horses were milling around in the road. One of the cavalrymen drew a saber. Luke still had one round in the revolver. The slug caught the cavalryman in the throat. With no time to reload the revolver, he jammed it back in his waistband. Up ahead, sparks flew in the darkness as the lit fuse burned toward a small keg filled with blasting powder. The soldier who lit it stood in the middle of the bridge, vaguely illuminated by the sputtering glow. Confused by the unexpected fight of the Confederates, he took too long to decide whether to flee or stay. When Luke started across the bridge, the Yankee lifted his rifle. The ball whipped past Luke's head. Luke left the saddle in a diving tackle. When Luke scrambled to his knees, he saw the powder keg was about 10 feet from him, sitting against the wall on the left-hand side of the bridge. The fuse had only a few inches left to burn. The Yankee wasn't interested in fighting anymore. He just wanted to get the hell out of there before the powder went off and he was blown to bits. Quickly, Luke threw himself forward. Snatching up the end of the fuse, he plucked it from the keg. As he rolled onto his knees, he caught hold of the keg and flung it after the fleeing Yankee. It landed beside the man and bounced past him. He stumbled and fell, hitting the ground right at the end of the bridge. The keg came to a stop and rested on its side a few feet away from him. Luke looked back to see the cavalry patrol had regrouped. They charged toward him. Luke lunged toward the closest opening in the cover of the bridge as bullets passed through the air right behind his back.
Hold your fire! You're gonna hit them!
Saw the explosion from the powder keg from the corner of his eye as he launched himself through empty air toward the black surface of the James River. He struck the chilly water and went under. He kept sinking for a moment before he was able to right himself. He wasn't the best swimmer in the world, but he stroked his arms and kicked his feet, fighting his way back to the surface until his head broke out of the water. While he tried to stay afloat, he heard a gunfight going on. Since nobody seemed to be trying to kill him at the moment, he struggled toward the northern bank, which was closer. By the time he got there, the shooting had stopped, and a couple of horsemen emerged from under the cover near the site of the blast. Luke didn't know how he was going to put up a fight. His revolver wasn't loaded, and getting dunked in the river probably had ruined his caps and powder. He still had his knife, but he wasn't in any shape for hand-to-hand combat against overwhelming odds. The Yankees could just sit there and shoot him while he tried to climb out of the river.
Luke! Luke, is that you?
Remy, down here!
Come on out of there, you old water rat!
With the river water streaming from his clothes, Luke clambered onto the bank and collapsed. Remy dismounted and went down to help him.
What happened?
Lancaster and the others heard the shooting. Came to see what was going on. You and I had already done enough damage to the Yankees that they was able to wipe out the rest of the patrol.
Anybody hurt?
Nah, we were lucky. How about you?
I reckon I'm all right. Just wet and tired. My ammunition's probably ruined, too.
Don't worry about that. We'll be able to scavenge plenty of powder and shot from those dead Yankees, not to mention their guns.
And their horses. It won't hurt for us to have some extra mounts.
Most of the horses are bolted, but we might be able to catch a few.
By the time Luke and Remy reached the road, the wagons had crossed the bridge. They had to steer around the gaping hole in the ground where the keg of blasting powder had gone off, but there was room enough at the side of the road for them to manage that.
From what Corporal Duquesne tells me, if we'd come along a little later, this bridge would already be gone. The same would be true if not for your swift action, Jansen. Good job.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for coming along and taking a hand in the fight.
When we heard the shots, I should have ordered the drivers to turn the wagons around. But it wasn't wise of me to risk our cargo just to see what was happening to the two of you. But everything seems to have worked out all right. Just don't expect me to keep pulling your fat out of the fire, Jansen.
No, sir, I won't.
And we better move quickly now. There are probably more Yankee patrols in the area. They would have been expecting to hear an explosion, but when their men don't come back, they start to wonder what happened. We don't want to be here when they come to find out.
Luke started looking for his horse and found the animal grazing peacefully on the grass at the side of the road. He couldn't do anything about his wet clothes except wait for him to dry. That'd be miserable, but he could put up with it. He found his hat on the bridge where it had fallen off when he tackled the Yankee. The Confederates hastily helped themselves to guns and ammunition from their fallen foes.
Permission to catch some of those Yankee horses, Colonel?
No.
It never hurts to have extra mounts, Colonel.
Those horses have U.S. Army brands on them. If we're captured, it's unlikely we'll be able to talk ourselves out of a firing squad. But it'd be even more difficult if we were in possession of Yankee cavalry mounts.
The Colonel's got a point there. It might be better if we just make do without them.
Nobody put up an argument. A short time later, the group was on the move, following the road into the rugged, wooded countryside of northern Virginia. Riding in the wagon with Dale again, Luke looked over at Wiley Potter, who rode alongside the vehicle.
Thanks for coming to help me back there.
Well, sure, Jansen. What else could we do? We're all on the same side, ain't we?
After the fight at the bridge, the scouts didn't run into any more trouble. A couple times they heard hoofbeats coming along the road and quickly found places where they could pull the wagons off into the trees. Yankee cavalrymen galloped past without even slowing down, never realizing how close the Confederates were. The riders could only be Yankees. Nobody else would be out and about at night. The people who lived in the area were huddled in their houses and cabins, hoping and praying they wouldn't be slaughtered before morning by the northern invaders. Luke thought about his Ma and Kirby and Janie back on the farm. There had been fighting in Missouri, although not as much as in the past, and widespread bloody raids by guerrilla forces on both sides. He hoped none of the violence had come near the Jensen family farm. By morning, the Confederates were still several miles north of Richmond. As the sun came up, Potter and Casey found a cave-like opening under a rugged bluff topped with trees. Dale and Edgar drove the wagons into it at Colonel Lancaster's command. There was room for the horses under the bluff, too.
We'll stay here today. Traveling in daylight is too risky while we're still this close to Richmond. When we swing west and then south, we'll be less likely to run into the Yankees, so we can stay on the road more and make better time then.
Based on what he had seen so far, Luke had doubts of Lancaster's ability to be in charge of the mission, but he agreed with the colonel's decision. They were all tired and needed some rest, and it would be better for them to lie low for a while. They made an unappetizing breakfast of hardtack and salt jowl. No coffee. Luke wasn't sure how long it had been since he'd had real coffee. They took turns sleeping while two men stood guard at all times. When it was Luke's turn to watch, he was paired with Ted Casey. They hunkered in some brush near the wagons, and the first thing Casey did was reach for a tobacco pouch and papers in his shirt pocket.
You can't roll a Quirly.
Why not?
Because the smell of tobacco smoke can travel a pretty good distance. The road's only about a quarter mile away. You don't want some smart Yankee coming along, smelling your smoke and getting curious enough to come over here and take a look around.
If they were smart, they wouldn't be Yankees.
They probably think the same thing about us Confederates.
Don't start talking about how they just think they're doing the right thing and how we should hate them because of that.
They're not doing the right thing. They invaded our homes. Of course we have to fight them. But the ones I really hate are the politicians from both sides who keep prodding and poking at each other until they felt like they had to start a war over something that could have been settled without one.
What are you talking about?
Did you know that more than 20 years ago, some congressmen from the South were already talking about ending slavery? Their plan was to get rid of it in stages, so the Southern economy wouldn't be ruined in the process. If the Northern politicians had just gone along with that idea, by now a lot of the slaves would be free, maybe even all of them, and there wouldn't have been any need for this war. But the Northerners turned it down flat. They already started making speeches about how all the slaves had to be freed at once so they wouldn't go along with it.
I never heard nothing about anything like that. You're making it up.
Nope. I read about it in an old newspaper I came across once.
You know how to read, eh?
My Ma saw to that. And once I learned, I had a liking for it.
That was true. As a young boy and a young man, he had read every book and newspaper he could get his hands on. Unfortunately, in the part of the country where he'd grown up, reading material wasn't all that common. But some of the settlements had schools, and whenever he could, Luke would ride over to one of them, sneak in, and borrow whatever books he could find. He always took them back once he'd finished reading them, so he didn't consider it stealing. He was just doing whatever he had to in order to feed his thirst for knowledge. One of the few good things about the war was that churches across the South had donated Bibles for the troops, so Luke got the chance to read the good book from cover to cover more than once. Sometimes he came across other books, usually in abandoned houses. He nearly always had some sort of volume of prose or poetry tucked away in his gear, and he read them until they fell apart from exposure to the elements. He didn't have a book with him at the moment, but maybe once they got to Georgia, he could scrounge up a few. He had read some plays by an Englishman named Shakespeare, and he had a hankering to read more.
I don't understand it. I thought those Yankees were so all-fired anxious to have the slaves freed, and now you're telling me they turned down a chance to have that happen and went to war instead?
The politicians in Washington raised a big stink about slavery because they didn't want folks up north thinking too much about the way we were starting to develop more industry here in the South. All those rich men who owned factories up there didn't like that. They didn't like the contracts our businessmen were starting to make with businesses in England and other places in Europe either. The way they saw it, we weren't supposed to do anything except grow the crops. They'd do everything else the country needed and rake in all the money. They stirred up a bunch of well-meaning people who had real doubts about slavery and got them to fight a war over it. But if you want the truth, all you have to do is look around. You don't see any factories still standing in the South, do you?
Hey, it's all about states' rights. That's what we're fighting for.
It's true the North tried to trample on the rights of our sovereign states, but consider this. The Southern businessmen building those factories and making those contracts with the British wanted the money from those things as much as the Northern industrialists didn't want them to have it.
So what you're saying is the politicians and the fellas with a lot of money on both sides have got us fighting each other because they want to keep raking it in?
Draw your own conclusions, Casey. All I'm saying is the whole situation is a lot more complicated than what most folks think. One side yells about slavery, and the other side yells about states' rights. But like nearly everything else in life, most of it always comes back to money.
Casey nodded slowly, as if the implications of what Luke had said were sinking into his brain.
You know what we need to do?
What's that?
We need to get our own hands in some of that money the varmints are fighting over.
Men like you and me don't get rich, Casey. It's just not in the cards. And I don't really care. If this war was over tomorrow, I'd go back home and be mighty happy to do it. My family's farm isn't much, but if we have faith and work hard enough, it'll take care of us.
Yeah, there's better ways to get rich. Easier ways.
Casey turned his head to stare hard at the wagons.
You can forget about that. That gold belongs to the Confederacy. Thinking otherwise is the same thing as committing treason.
You got me all wrong, Jensen. I'm not thinking about anything except I'll be glad when our turn of guard duty is over so I can get me some more sleep.
It was a hard night, and I am still tired.
It was a hard night.
Your problem is you got too many thoughts in that head of yours. A man's brain ain't built to work that hard, Jensen. Me, all I think about is whiskey and women and killing Yankees. And that's plenty.
I figure it'll be a while before we get any whiskey or women, but it wouldn't surprise me if you get your fill of killing Yankees before this is all over.
After talking to Casey, Luke felt the need for some solitude. He took his rifle, climbed to the top of the bluff hanging over the wagons, and stretched out among the trees so he could gaze around the countryside. Other than numerous columns of smoke rising in the distance, marking the location of Richmond, he couldn't see any signs of the war from where he lay. Here and there, the vegetation was starting to turn green with the approach of spring. A few birds winged through the blue sky. Luke was sure the war would catch up to them again, probably sooner rather than later, but he was going to enjoy the solitude while he could. Weariness stole over him, begging him to close his eyes. He fought it off, knowing if he gave in to the temptation, he would fall asleep. The possibility of the Yankees sneaking up on the escort on his watch was unacceptable. To help keep himself awake, he looked down at the brush where Ted Casey still hunkered. He caught a glimpse of the scout through the branches, but only because he knew where the man was. Luke thought it was very unlikely anybody else would spot Casey. He recalled the way Casey had looked at the wagons while they were talking about getting rich. The memory brought a frown to Luke's face. As soon as President Davis had explained the details of the mission the night before, Luke had worried about entrusting the safety of so much gold to such a small group of men. It made sense from a tactical standpoint. 9 men and 2 wagons could move a lot faster and attract a lot less attention than a company of soldiers. But if some of those men turned out not to be trustworthy, it could lead to trouble. Luke knew he could trust Remy, Dale, and Edgar, and Colonel Lancaster was completely devoted to the Confederacy. The other 4 men were unknown quantities. In the long run, how would they react to the temptation of all that bullion? Of course, they could be wondering the exact same thing about him and his friends. Potter, Stratton, Richards, and Casey certainly hadn't held back when it came to fighting the Yankees at the bridge. They had pitched right in, risking their lives for the cause, and also to save him and Remy. Thinking about the cause made Luke ponder the future. It was pretty obvious the Confederate government couldn't survive without the funds represented by that gold. Even if they made it safely to Georgia with the wagons and the government set up a new capital there, would it mean anything except the Confederacy would cling to existence by its fingernails for another few weeks? Even if they made it safely to Georgia with the wagons and the government set up a new capital there, would it mean anything except the Confederacy would cling to existence by its fingernails for another few weeks? General William Tecumseh Sherman had already stormed through Georgia, leaving much of it in ruins. Atlanta, what was left of it after the Yankees had burned the city, was in Union hands. Once Richmond fell, as seemed inevitable, Grant could just turn around and march south, and the remnants of the Confederacy would be caught between 2 overwhelming forces. But despite his own cynicism, Luke knew he would fight to the end. Jensen's didn't give up, even in the face of certain defeat. Sometimes events had a way of taking unexpected turns. Even so, Luke didn't hold out much hope the mission would really change anything. He lay on top of the bluff until it was time to wake up Dale for a turn on guard duty. He climbed down, went into the cave-like overhang, and reached under the lead wagon to where Dale had wrapped up in a blanket. A shaken shoulder brought Dale out of his slumber.
Trouble?
Nope, everything's quiet. But it's your turn to stand guard. One thing. Keep an eye on Casey, Stratton, Potter, and Richards.
Why?
I just think it would be a good idea until we're sure how much we can count on them.
All right, Luke. But so far, they haven't given us any reason not to trust them.
Maybe not. But we want things to stay that way.
Before the sun went down that evening, Edgar Milgard built a small fire under the bluff. The overhang would disperse the smoke enough that it wouldn't be noticed. He cooked more of the salt pork, and they had biscuits with the meat instead of hardtack.
Don't get used to eating so fancy. We don't have much flour.
I sure could use a real drink right about now.
No liquor. We can't afford to let our guard down, even for a minute.
Oh, don't worry, Colonel. I was just wishing. We don't have any red eye anyway.
Richards glanced over at Stratton and winked fast. Luke barely noticed it, but it made him wonder. A little later, while they were saddling the horses, he pretended not to see Stratton until he bumped into the man.
Hey, be careful.
Sorry, Stratton, that was my fault. I wasn't watching what I was doing.
Well, no harm done, so don't worry about it.
Luke was going to worry about it, though. He was going to worry that either Stratton or Richards, or one of the other two, he supposed, had managed to sneak a bottle or a flask into their gear. Drinking itself didn't bother Luke. From time to time, he liked to have a beer or a shot of corn liquor. But he'd never had the thirst for the stuff some men did, and he agreed with Colonel Lancaster. They didn't need anything to distract them from their mission. They'd been given the job of taking the bullion to Georgia, and as soldiers, it was their duty to carry out those orders. Before they left camp, Luke went over to Lancaster.
I've been thinking about something, Colonel.
What's that, Jensen?
You seem to be the only one of us who knows exactly where we're going.
What's your point? I'm the only officer with this detail. The rest of you are just enlisted men. I'm the only one who needs to know.
Begging your pardon, sir. But if anything were to happen to you, we wouldn't know where to deliver the gold. I was thinking that if you had a map or something...
So you'd know exactly where to avoid if you tried to abscond with these wagons?
Colonel, I never said such a thing. I never even thought it.
Well, I can't take any chances. President Davis himself picked me for this mission, and I don't intend to let him or the Confederacy down. So you just concern yourself with your own responsibilities, Corporal, and let me worry about everything else.
Yes, sir, Colonel.
Luke turned and went back to the wagons. Remy had helped Dale hitch up the team to the lead wagon.
What was that all about, mon ami?
Remember we talked about how the Colonel is the only one who knows where we're going?
Sure.
Well, I said something to him about it, and he wasn't inclined to share the information, which he told me in no uncertain terms.
I never minded serving under the Colonel in the field. Thought he did a pretty good job, in fact. But put him out here in command of a small group like this, he's sort of a jackass, ain't he?
So far.
You think he can manage to get all the way to Georgia without getting himself killed?
It's not him I'm worried about. I'd just as soon get the rest of us there without us getting killed.
They traveled through the night without encountering any trouble. And after resting, the next day Colonel Lancaster announced they would turn and head west for a night before starting south again.
We'll be well clear of Richmond, so we shouldn't run into any trouble.
We'll be behind Yankee lines.
Yes, but all their attention is focused on Richmond now. As long as we avoid their supply trains and relief columns, we should be fine. I'm relying on you men for that.